Hi, good afternoon, everyone. This is Margaret Battistelli, Editor-in-Chief of Fundraising Success Magazine. I hope you're enjoying your experience with our second annual virtual conference and expo. Welcome to our When Disaster Strikes, Handling and Retaining All Those Donors session. Well, that's a mouthful. In the wake of recent catastrophic events in Haiti and Japan and elsewhere around the world, we thought this would be a good time to explore not only how to handle the huge influx of donors that occurs around these disasters, but also how to hold on to those donors and turn them into engaged, ongoing supporters. But before we get started, there are a few technical points I need to go over to help you make the most of your experience today. First, if you have any technical difficulties, troubleshoot by clicking on the Help button at the bottom of the console or let us know via the Ask a Question box. To get a PDF version of the slide presentation for future reference, click on the Download Slides button on the console. If you'd like to submit a question to our speakers today, you may do so at any point during the presentation by using the Ask a Question box, and we will get to as many of your questions as we can at the end of the session. If you leave the session at any time or you'd like to view it again later, you can access the entire presentation from the auditorium in the Fundraising Success Virtual Conference and Expo on-demand environment, which will be open for 3 months beginning on Monday, May 23rd. Finally, if you're on Twitter, we encourage you to tweet about the show today and about this session. Please use hashtag #FSV2011 when doing so. Okay, with all of that out of the way, I'm very pleased to introduce our speakers. Joining us today are Tom Hampson, Director of Constituent Engagement at Church World Service, Andrew Magginson, Senior Consultant at Convio, Steve McLaughlin, Director of Internet Solutions at Blackbaud, and Andrew Lodano, Account Director at L.W. Robbins. We'll start by turning things over to Tom and Andrew, who will discuss Church World Service's experiences in Haiti.
Great. Thank you so much, Margaret. I appreciate that introduction and appreciate the opportunity to share some of the experience that Church World Service has had in addressing, engaging their supporters around a particular disaster. What we would like to lift up in this conversation is some of the things that we learned out of the Haiti disaster that might prove of use to those of you on the call. As you know, on October 12, 2010, Haiti experienced a devastating earthquake. It would have been devastating anywhere in the world, but in the poorest country in the Western Hemisphere, it was particularly catastrophic. As a result of the vivid images that people saw on their television screens and then in their newspapers, it evoked a very powerful response. And I imagine many of you, as we did, experienced an incredible upsurge in contributions, donors coming to really reaching out to the people of Haiti, wanting to respond. For us, as this slide indicates, we saw just in the first 7 days a quite extraordinary increase in activity on our website. Gift volume increased astronomically, and a number of new donors came to us as a result. So one of our challenges was, of course, how to engage those people, how to allow them opportunities to respond in creative and continuing ways. So one of the ways that we were able to respond, because Church World Service has worked in Haiti for a long time, we were able to mount a e-blast to constituents within about 5 hours of the earthquake itself. We were also able very speedily to change our website, creating opportunities for people to learn more about the consequences of the quake. And that vehicle continued to be updated routinely. As you see here on this slide, within about the first 72 hours, we were able to create a resource center, which became an ongoing part of our website, where people could find both the most recent updates, they could find congregational resources, because Church World Service, as our name would suggest, is really an expression of a number of denominations around the United States. It was particularly important for us to create resources that congregations could employ in their worship services and things like that. We also began as an experiment to use Google AdWords as a way to bring our name forth to people who might be looking for ways to respond, and Andrew will talk a little bit more about that. We also invited donors to, beyond providing financial assistance, to create kits. Churchill Service has used kits of various kinds in emergency situations, both in the United States and overseas. In this instance, we were particularly looking for health kits and made a very specific outreach both on our website and in our e-blasts and on our e-zine for congregations and individuals to create health kits and ship them to us so that we could provide them to people in need in Haiti. One of the things that we did that was new for us in this event, and it was one that our staff particularly appreciated, was to create a second resource center that was only for staff. It was actually a Google site off our website that basically functioned as the kind of rough draft for content that would later be fine-tuned and in some expression find its way on our website. But for our staff who were interpreting the work of Churchill Service, who were answering the phones, who were among our regional staff around the country responding to questions, this gave them really a way to have really firsthand content that was posted to that site from our field staff in Haiti. So video footage, photos, they're just almost like blog-like comments about what they were experiencing, seeing, and what they were assessing the situation to be, gave our staff a sense of immediacy that then they could convey to their own constituents. The feedback that we got on that was extremely positive. On the offline side, of course, we were also sending out a direct mail appeal and making a variety of efforts for media coverage of the ways in which we were responding. The initial email that we sent out, as I said, within just the first few hours, really just tried to give a very brief idea of both the scale of the disaster, some of the ways that we were responding, and underlining the fact that we had a long history in the region, so that we were an established presence there, and we had established means of distribution even in very desperate circumstances. The other thing which we did, as I had mentioned, was taking over the homepage almost immediately to provide a very vivid and immediate way for people to respond to us, either because they were responding to the e-blast that we had sent out or because people were Googling for ways to respond and found us that way. I'm going to turn this over to Andrew for a couple of minutes to talk about some of the other things that we did.
Great. Thanks, Tom. So one of the things that we did as part of this project was we really tried to do the best we can to take advantage of the social media as an additional communication channel. You know, there's a couple obvious ways that, you know, everyone should probably understand how to use that, but there are a couple of things that were a little bit surprising and unexpected as well. So obviously it's a perfect channel to sort of extend your megaphone beyond your own house file or the people that are already following you and keeping in touch through that channel, but really to go and leverage the megaphone of all the supporters to go out and sort of advocate or share on your behalf. So, you know, the obvious calls to action of going out to our established audience and saying, hey, this is what we're doing, you know, follow up with our progress. These are the ways that you can get involved. This is a way for you to see directly in almost real time what our impact is and what our projects and activities are, but there are a couple things that were a little bit surprising. One of them was, you know, in addition to people responding directly to our, you know, one-way communication downward, people then went and took our message and shared it out with their own personal network. We asked them, sometimes they did it when we asked them to, and sometimes they just did it on their own. So that was great. We ended up getting a lot of new or sort of found traffic as a result of our online loyalists going out and making that peer-to-peer ask to participate in our activities. The other thing that we did was every time we would start a conversation with people, our followers would sort of validate our efforts. They would, you know, they would retweet our messages. They would share it with friends. They would comment, and it really did provide a good platform to have a two-way conversation with our constituents, where we were able to give them insight as to what we were doing, what the progress update was. And then to have them talk back to us and sort of validate our efforts and sort of provide that credibility, we felt was really valuable as well. So moving on to the next slide. One of the obvious things that we did, and one of the things that we did almost immediately, was create a dedicated donation form. So, you know, the things that we really wanted to do here was knowing that there was going to be a lot of sort of found traffic. If people had been active in the offline channel before, maybe this is the first time that they're coming to our website to check us out or make a donation online. So we wanted to make sure that we could establish that credibility and trust early on. So something that we didn't normally do, but we added for this donation form was, you know, putting that A rating from the American Institute of Philanthropy, you know, just as a general best practice. We knew that to be a good idea, especially doubly so with all the new folks that were coming to the site. We also wanted to promote the awareness of the government incentives to donate to Haiti, obviously with the tax break scenario. So we put a link in there. Not normally a best practice, but we felt it was worth doing here. And obviously having a dedicated donation form that allows people to know instantly without any shadow of a doubt that their funds are going to go to, you know, the cause that they definitely came to the site to donate to, we felt was very important, and obviously something that we would recommend everybody have in their back pocket and ready to go and be able to get up and running very quickly. Obviously, it doesn't have to be the fanciest or the prettiest thing in the whole wide world, as long as it's simple, straightforward, and people can sort of instantly understand that this is exactly where they were looking for and this is where their money's going to go. So obviously one of the first things that we wanted to be able to do was get out a response appeal. Some of the messaging goals in here, we felt it was really important to be very transparent about our activities and programs in the area. So we wanted to describe the current aid programs, sort of make that case for giving, draw a direct line between their donation and the programs or the impact that gift will have. And then obviously we wanted to be sensitive to the individuals who had already given a gift. We suppressed individuals who had already given to Haiti and instead changed their messaging from a, you know, make a gift to a, you know, see what your gift is doing on the ground. The thing to note here, the open rate is just astronomically high. 47% is very good. You know, click-through rate of 6% for any kind of appeal is very strong. And then obviously a pretty strong response rate as well. If we normally see a response rate of between, you know, 0.1 and 0.2 for any type of normal standard issue appeal, you know, this was obviously, you know, significantly higher. Next, we wanted to take advantage of the Google AdWords program. At the time that the quake hit, we did not have Google AdWords plan in place, but we felt that this was a good opportunity to sort of get our feet wet or understand what this could do for us as an acquisition channel. Or, you know, we really didn't know what would happen. So we just sort of went forward boldly. We just started, we set aside a small budget to determine whether or not it would make sense from an ROI perspective. We quickly understood that it was a very ROI positive exercise for us. The big lessons learned here were we were able to get this up and running on January 20th, although it did work very well for us, it would have worked significantly better if we had been able to get this launched on day one or within the first 24 hours. And we did see other organizations that had these programs in place and were able to get those AdWords up and running almost immediately. So it was a bit of a learning process for us. it was definitely worthwhile, and now that we have sort of the infrastructure in place, we are prepared to have that up and running very quickly if, you know, in the event that we should have to relaunch that program. So the moral of the story here for us was get your Google account set up now. Go ahead and start staking out AdWords so that you don't have to go through the 24-hour approval process, and really the people who are sort of first to market win the day. Next, one of the things that we did was we made the decision to sort of hijack the newsletter. We wanted to take over all the normal content and talk exclusively about what we're doing around the Haiti crisis. So the things that we did here and the things that were interesting to us is, in addition to telling the normal standard issue stories about programs and progress and impact and what the boots on the ground are doing and telling the stories, you know, we had lots of that, and that's really good, and we tried to push that out as best we can. But the other thing that we used this for was a platform to lift up the stories about what our supporters are doing and their efforts in their communities, and tell those stories to our other supporters so that they can see that, you know, the Church World Service community, you know, these are the things that people are doing. We found it to be a pretty powerful sort of motivational vehicle for people to not only see what we're doing with our boots in the ground in Haiti, but to see what our larger, you know, national community is coming together around this. And we also sort of used this as a one-stop shop to sort of mirror the content that was available on the Resource Center. So if the Resource Center, you know, had all sorts of media, pictures, audio, stories, all that good stuff, we tried to reflect that here, you know, again, just bringing the content out to our supporters instead of just waiting for them to come to the landing page. In addition, some of the other things that we had that worked out very well for us is we always included a passive call to action, and there are several different things that we could that we allowed people to do. Make a gift, obviously. Assemble the Church World Service kit was very important. Taking advocacy actions, and then, you know, any additional resources that we were able to provide for congregational groups, we wanted to be able to push that out through this through the newsletter channel. And again, we saw significantly higher open rates and click-through rates in the first 45 days, you know, as compared to a normal newsletter.
One thing I would add there is that what we learned from the invitation from congregations who were responding, making kits and things like that, not only found its way into subsequent editions of our monthly e-zine, but we also created a section on our webpage just to highlight those stories with accompanying photos. So it was a great way to sort of reinforce their own story as being a part of the story that we were sharing of the CWS response.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Thanks, Tom. Finally, the last slide for us is just a quick picture of the content hub. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this. I think we need to start moving on. But, you know, the basic gist was just providing a one-stop shop where everyone could go. It's a single URL that we could place everywhere and tell people to go to see the latest updates about what was going on. Again, we felt like this worked well for us, and it allowed for us to have a single consolidated place to throw all the amazing content that we were getting in from the boots on the ground, as well as what our supporter community was doing. Finally, we had a Lightbox promotion that we ran during the last week of January. We like the Lightbox idea, but again, we think that we probably came to market with this a little bit too late. The click-through rate on this was very good. It didn't have a financial call to action. So probably lessons learned is we would probably try to get this up and running sooner rather than later. We think it's okay to have that disruptive experience. We've seen this work with other organizations. So that was another lesson learned for us.
And for me, I think that the two last things to say. One, we had done a follow-up mailing to all the congregations that responded to us around the country by preparing kits. We, about 6 weeks after this, we sent them a hard copy letter reporting on what had happened with the kits, what Churchill Service was doing, inviting their continuing response. And then we had follow-up email reports to our online donors, letting them know what we were doing and making soft asks as a part of that. And maybe the last thing to say is, as you, I hope, have gathered from this, is that our partnership with Convio was a very dynamic one, particularly in this instance, and greatly appreciated. So thanks, folks. Hope that was helpful.
Great. Thank you very much, Steve. We're going to turn things over to you.
Great. Appreciate everyone joining today's session. And over the next couple of minutes, I want to sort of take the next step in all these discussions and talk about a couple of important topics, mainly what are some tips and essentials to retaining donors, engaging with donors when a disaster does strike. So I want to focus on really the top five things that nonprofit organizations pay attention to. One, timing is everything. Two, prepare, train, and rehearse. Three, segment, communicate, and repeat. Four, be multi-channel. And five, follow up, steward, and follow up. And I want to take a little bit of time to go into these in detail. Certainly, based on a lot of research and working with a little over 24,000 nonprofits in 72 countries, Blackbaud has had an opportunity to look at what happens when these events happen, and in particular, what's changed over the past 15, 20 years in terms of fundraising practices when it comes to responding to major disasters that happen. The first one is timing is everything, and I think the last the group of presenters touched on this, of just how important it was. But it's actually statistically really important to be on time and to make sure that you're reacting and doing it in a very timely manner. When we've looked at the past several major disasters that have happened, when we look at Katrina, the Asian tsunami, when we look at Haiti, and most recently the Japanese earthquake and tsunami, there's a pattern that emerges. And the pattern is, after the first 3 to 4 days, the amount of online giving peaks, and it decreases from there on out. So that's why it is so critical and essential for organizations to be prepared in advance, because the majority of the online giving that takes place is during a very limited window of time, and that's a pattern that's repeated itself in the past couple of disasters that's taken place. So making sure you've got donation pages, landing pages, email segmentation, newsletter templates, email templates set up in advance and prepared is really key to meet that critical timing window to reach prospective donors and supporters. The second tip is, you know, leading into that, is you can prepare for these things. The reality is, even if you're not an international relief organization, there may be emergency situations that your organization encounters. And a lot of it can be prepared for in advance, and you can train for. And the way that I think is a good way to think about this is preparing in terms of both people, process, and technology. Does your staff have experience with prior emergency situations? Have you predefined segments or groups that you would be targeting from an ask or fundraising perspective? How are volunteers and other key supporters and constituents engaged? What's the process that your organization has to have a rapid response plan in order to do things? Has that content been pre-approved in advance, where you're just dropping in simple additive messaging to it in order to get it out very, very quickly? And from a technology standpoint, can your website, online giving forms, can they handle 3 to 4 times their normal traffic? Have you looked at a scaled-down web presence that maybe just focuses on some certain critical tasks that you would want visitors to complete? And what we find time and time again is that organizations who do prepare, train, and rehearse for these episodes in advance are much more effective at responding to them when these emergencies happen. Number three, segment, communicate, and repeat. The notion of making sure you're doing very specific segmentation is as old a fundraising practice as ever, but it applies to not just direct mail and direct marketing tactics, but also to the use of email and web communication and in terms of planning these things out. So one of the things you want to look at is, from a donor perspective, you know, are you breaking out segments for prior episodic donors? What about lapsed episodic donors who maybe have potentially not given to the organization since that last emergency event? Are you doing segmentation around geography? If that episode, that event takes place in a particular area, how are you geographically targeting donors? The other thing that's also important is to look at prior giving history in terms of where, what you may focus on, and also the ask amounts that you may be going after on a particular targeted online donation page. Also important to keep in mind special affinity groups that you would want to segment by. So board members, volunteers, activists, different demographic information that you have about donors. The other thing that's important to note about is, when you're doing this plan, that think of it in terms of an overall communication and fundraising campaign, not a one-time ask. Treat it as though it's part of an ongoing campaign specifically related to this event, and I'll come back to why that's so important. Number four, be multi-channel. The reality is that the web, mobile, and social are now the first response channels of choice for donors and supporters. That's where they're going to first to learn about what's happening. In a lot of cases, it's where they found out about what happened first. So very important to make sure that you're being multi-channel in your approaches, and you're also being consistent in terms of messaging. So the use of social media such as Facebook, Twitter, and other types of social media places, the combination of web and email content, and then certainly making sure that you're paying attention to mobile and mobile users. The reality is your organization will be able to respond much quicker using multi-channel approaches than traditional direct mail, direct marketing tactics. So make sure that you're being multi-channel about your communication efforts and doing it in a very timely manner. The last tip is follow-up, steward, and follow-up. One of the big differences between organizations who are successful at disaster-based fundraising, and more importantly, their ability to retain those episodic donors, not just have them a one-time donor, is your ability to communicate and steward to them. So what happened after that first gift was made? How has the organization responded? What were the outcomes? Making sure that you're following up. Some very successful organizations already have a plan in place so that within a week or even just several days of the event taking place, they're already responding and following back up to donors, letting them know about the impact that gift has made. Also, don't forget about the importance of doing the basics. Receiving and stewarding, even though they are episodic donors, even though you may have a situation where you have thousands or tens of thousands or millions of new donors coming in, make sure that you're doing the blocking and tackling that you need to be. So receiving, stewarding, and then also focus on when do you make that additional follow-up ask, right? And if you've done a good job at follow-up, communicating the impact of that initial gift and the outcomes from that initial gift, it leads into your ability to do subsequent asks of those donors on an ongoing basis over time. So these are just five of sort of the essential tips for how to work with and engage disaster donors.
Before we go on to Andrew, I would like to just let everybody know, if you do have some questions, please feel free to submit them at any time. You don't have to wait till the end, although we will wait until the end to ask our speakers the questions, but please feel free to submit them as we go along. Anyway, I would like to turn things over to Andrew.
Thank you very much. I just wanted to start by saying that I know that a lot of this focus has been on the online channel for direct marketing. And so what I'd like to do is kind of take it just a little bit different approach, which is to focus on the direct mail side of things and the direct mail channel. And also focus on the retention side. We've done a lot of direct mail acquiring of disaster donors, both with Haiti and prior to that, also the Pakistan emergency, and wanted to kind of put forward some of our learnings with regard to that, and really go through five different tips. The first step is segment your disaster donors. And I know Steve mentioned, talked about segment. Obviously, these donors don't retain the same way as traditional direct mail acquired donors. And so the first thing that we recommend is to model them. And using conversion models, you can see which ones have a higher probability to give. So in other words, don't just rely totally on the traditional RFM types of matrices, but to really try to model them maybe the way you would model deep lapse donors, find out maybe some other psychodemographic or other types of influences that may determine whether they would be qualified donors. The second thing is to invest in the higher value ones. So once you've done the segmentation, you've done the modeling, you've determined who are your best or most likely donors to give again, maybe invest a little bit more than you would in a traditionally newly acquired donor. A couple of the techniques that we would suggest trying to get that second gift is maybe a handwritten card. A very high touch direct mail, first class postage, something to make it really stand out, or use another channel that's a high response type channel like a telemarketing phone call. Because they don't respond as well, and we know that once you get that second gift, they retain much higher, would be willing to invest a little bit more in the carefully segmented, carefully modeled, higher value donors with a stronger direct response type of device. The third tip is to renew as acquired. So if they've seen a format and your direct mail format for acquiring was a very emergency-driven, emergency request, teaser, copy, all talking in very critical terms, all talking in very emergency terms, use that same format, use that same look and feel to try to get a second gift. And while you can't always depend on a natural disaster, sometimes you can put other looks and feels to other types of your regular renewal series to give them that same look and feel. You really want to reinforce the reasons for giving in terms of the disaster nature. And many of these organizations are constantly working in emergency type environments. It may be a man-made disaster instead of an earthquake or a tsunami or a typhoon, but you can give that same look and feel when you do that. Our fourth tip is to revisit the theme. I can't tell you how many times I've seen where organizations have acquired a lot of donors because of a particular emergency, but they already have all of their themes worked out for their entire renewal series, and they just put their disaster donors into that same renewal series, and they don't go back and revisit that theme. Donors not only want to give to the disaster to help in a crisis, but they want to hear what has been done with their dollars. They want to know that their money was put to good use, that and they want to get updated on that. So always emphasize the ongoing need and revisit the theme of the initial disaster in your regular renewal series as best you can. Always make a point of trying to do that. So if you're going to go out and acquire people on a Haiti disaster, make sure that in your renewal series somewhere you're referencing and giving an update on what's going on with your ongoing efforts in Haiti. Another thing is, and I can give you some statistics on this, but have a strong new donor welcome package. kit or series, when donors give to a particular crisis or a particular disaster, they may not know exactly what the mission of your organization is. It's an emotional, it's a spontaneous type of response. And what it does is it really gives you an opportunity as the organization to go in there to teach them more about the mission of your organization and reinforce why donor support is needed moving forward. And what I try to do here is give you one example of one of the welcome packages we used for United Nations High Refugee Council. The new donor welcome acknowledgement on the outside, it's here's what your recent donation is accomplishing. So they know that this is part of their thank you. And then in the letter, it talks about who the United Nations High Refugee Council is. We inserted their most recent newsletter, which generally will go into topics about four or five different areas around the world that they're working. And, of course, there's the reply slip to try to get a second gift. And part of that is also about is a ask for a second gift and also introduces the monthly giving concept. Included in that new donor welcome package is also an insert called Frequently Asked Questions. Again, this is about the organization. It talks about the people that they're helping, what their mission is. It also has an insert about the monthly giving. Again, the monthly giving is mission-focused. The question and answer is all about the organization, trying to educate the donor about the organization. When we instituted this new donor welcome package, which went from sort of just acknowledging the gift, thanking them for the gift, we had about a 22% increase in the first-year donor retention by just putting these additional elements in the package. The last thing is frequency of mailing or frequency of touches. Beyond sort of making sure that you have a steady stream of communication with the donor, we also have a supply of materials just in case of an emergency. So we will mail monthly, but then we will also have a supply of letter stock, envelopes, and reply envelopes that are strictly just for an emergency. So make sure that you're prepared in that regard too. Be ready to go out. We were able to with the typhoon in Pakistan turn around from mailing the emergency donors within a 36-hour window from the point of hearing about the typhoon in Pakistan, where we had refugee camps, to the point of actually getting out in the mail with a communication from the program director who was managing the refugee camps in Pakistan. So reinforcing what they're saying about timing, as quickly as you can get out there and get them to renew through when another emergency might happen is important. So to kind of just review, segment your disaster donors, invest in the higher value donors, be prepared to renew as a choir and revisit the theme of your initial disaster, and have a strong new donor welcome program to educate your donors once you get them to make that first gift, and take that opportunity to really educate them about the organization, reinforce mission giving, and try to get that second gift right away.
Oh, great. Thank you all so much. We have a few minutes for some questions. One question that we had very early on was, and I will throw this out to anyone, does anyone have any information on percentage of people who give to a disaster who then turn around and give a second gift to that same organization? Or general ideas?
Could you repeat the question again?
Are there any numbers that indicate what percentage of people who give to a disaster appeal who then turn around and give a second gift to that organization once the immediacy of it has subsided?
Well, I can tell you for one organization that I work with, typically in the past it had been about a 20% conversion of disaster donors into regular donors, and by instituting that welcome kit that I had mentioned, we had a 20% lift on that just from the disaster donors.
Okay. Does anyone else have any numbers around that?
Well, this is Steve McLaughlin. One thing to also keep in mind is some research into episodic donors shows that typically a good organization can retain them over a period of 3 years, but that's usually the max that most nonprofits are retaining a pure episodic donor, where that was the source of their donor acquisition. Some obviously do a lot worse than that, but at max, that's typically the trend, is 3 years of retaining them.
Okay. Andrew L., I'd like to go back to a point that you made about positioning or using man-made disasters and positioning in the same way as natural disasters to have that same sense of urgency. We had talked earlier today during our keynote to Andrew Bales from the Union Rescue Mission, who had and I'm not going to say disaster, but it was an emergency for the organization, and he put out an emergency appeal. And his point was that if you're going to say that this is an emergency or that this is a disaster, it really does have to be, or else you're going to hurt your credibility. Can you talk a little bit about that and how you can frame something that isn't, you know, like a tsunami or an earthquake, frame it with the same sense of urgency without maybe being perceived as the organization that cried wolf?
Sure. I'll try to give you one example. For probably over a year, one of the disasters that our control acquisition was on the emergency in Darfur, and a lot of the violence surrounding that, and the refugees that transitioned from Darfur over into Chad to seek refuge. And as that kind of was winding down and trying to give people an update, one of the things that we kind of tried to take advantage of was in January, there was a key vote that was going on with regard to northern Darfur and southern Darfur gaining independence of each other, and the anticipated violence that was going to be surrounding that vote, and the oil rights that were sort of in the middle of the country. So we went out with a messaging that talked about the anticipated violence and the increased number of refugees that was being anticipated as a result of that violence as it came through. So it was talking to the emergency donors that were acquired when the first Darfur and subsequent violence that took place there and that human crisis, and then gave them an update and gave them a sense of urgency of what was to be anticipated, what was to come, and put it in a package format that was very similar to a package format that they were originally acquired on in terms of the look and feel.
Steve, I'd like to ask you, are there any lessons that come from disaster fundraising, raising funds around a very specific disaster, that fundraisers can use just in their general fundraising? Anything that can be extrapolated that you can say, okay, this is something that works really well when it comes to raising money around a disaster. Oh, look, it can also work when there isn't a disaster and you're just doing your annual fund or a specific campaign.
Sure. I think almost all of them apply. Being focused on segmenting your audiences, making the right ask at the right time, using the right combination of channels, follow-up and stewardship. I think the key differences are timing and volume, that in your normal annual fund world, you have a lot more control over timing, looking at the annual calendar and when you're doing things, but also volume. And what tends to happen with organizations is when these major events happen, because they're not prepared for them in advance, they're just overwhelmed by the volume of gifts or things that are happening that they're not able to sort of do best practices in terms of messaging, segmentation. There's a tendency to focus on a big blast and just to do something as opposed to being very strategic and focused about doing those things.
Tom or Andrew, do you have anything that you can add to that?
Well, yeah, I mean, I do think that a lot of the lessons here are applicable across the board, I think. One of the things that I was thinking to respond to your earlier question, we did a subsequent mailing to the folks who responded to the Haiti quake with an emergency-focused mailing around emergency preparedness. So it was, in a certain sense, analogous to the other approach of sort of anticipating something. This is like helping us to prepare for what we know will be, you know, disasters to come. So I think you can frame disaster content in a way when there isn't a specific disaster, but you're trying to prepare for one too.
Okay, great. We could probably talk about this for quite a while, but unfortunately we're out of time. On behalf of Fundraising Success, I want to thank our speakers and also want to thank all of our attendees for taking the time to join us. If you're interested in discussing anything you heard this morning, this afternoon, we encourage you to visit the Networking Lounge to chat live with other session attendees. And also, please stick around for our exciting closing session. Also, check out the agenda for the rest of the day today. We had a bunch of terrific sessions lined up, and if you couldn't watch them live, you can catch them later at your convenience in the on-demand environment. Have a great day, everyone, and thank you again for joining us.